Wilson, like a cork in the ocean over his head.
Marking contest over the top. Subic, great grab.
Across the ground. Bam! In comes Donny Wurzbach.
Got it out to a kick. Kick smothered. Check. Hunter! Who would have thought the sequel would be just as good as the original?
Kicks inside 50. McGovern! McGovern! What a player!
Sheik needs to be inch perfect. The
The premiers of 1992.
The 1994 premiers.
Premiers. The 2006.
The 2018 AFL Premiership team. The West Coast Eagles.
G'day everyone, welcome back to the Big Footy Eagles podcast. Very special episode of the show tonight. We've got a bit of a legend, both in the Eagles circles and in the podcasting circles, joining us. Premiership player, club legend, club icon, life member, and now the master of all things Backchat Studios, Will Schofield, joining us on the show. G'day, mate. Welcome to the show.
Look, great to be here. If you want me to lie to you, I'll say I'm sitting here in a brand new studio, just ready and ready to go. If you want me to be honest, I'm lying on the couch. I've had a big fucking week. A kid's running around the house. I'm trying to shut up just so I can get some good stuff here. I've got the footy on in the background. This is actually a good Thursday night. Talk some shit on a potty, watch the Friday night footy. Aaron Norton's done his knee, which looks fucking bad, and talk a bit of Eagles. Looking forward to it.
How good. Well, look, you've led us nicely there. Let's start with the Eagles. We'll get back to Aaron Norton and him coming home to WA just a bit later on. But obviously, you were there on the weekend. You saw it firsthand. You were on the call with Pav. You got a bit of grief for the call, actually. Let's start there. How do you go when you're on the call, you're there with Pav and Paps, and I think you're doing a pretty good job. Everyone's pretty happy with things. And then you jump on Twitter or you get in your inbox and all the Demons fans are saying, Scully, what were you doing there, mate?
Look, to be really honest, I couldn't really care less what anyone thinks, like whether that's good feedback or bad feedback. Like I spend a lot of time just trying to be myself. And if you like it, good for you. If you don't really care. It's not that I, you know, disrespectfully don't care what people think, but if you spend all your life thinking what others are going to be thinking about what you're saying, you'll never be able to get anything out. So I just try to say it how I see it. I try to be myself. And yeah, some Demons fans weren't happy about it, but you know what? Like that was, I don't know, that was as bad as a performance as you'd probably expect from a top four side against West Coast. And they weren't happy that I was calling it that way. So you can kind of understand it. They're going to be as biased as I probably am. They've got the demon-coloured glasses on and, you know, want to see it go their way. But, yeah, it was I really don't like hearing the you know, players saying, oh, it's difficult in social media land. People are abusing me and poor me. It's not that fucking bad. If you don't want to be abused on social media, get out of your DMs. Don't look. It's not hard not to be abused. If you want to cop it, jump on and give it back. I'm happy to give it back and forth. It doesn't really bother me too much. I don't really like the trying by current players about the treatment they get on social media. If you don't like it, just get off it. It's not that hard.
Was there anyone that was notorious for, do you know anyone that was, you know, jumping on the forums, jumping on Twitter and in their mentions after a good game or a bad game?
No, not a lot of guys did it, to be honest. I was always pretty heavy in it. Like, I've always had a pretty decent interest in media. I've been doing media probably for 15 years. If I think back to the first sort of stuff I did at the footy club. I wouldn't say there's that many guys that jump on their phones after. There's more text messages and people looking for a, you know, pat in the back. But it is changing as we go. We're starting to see more players do more content on social media, which I think is a good thing. I think we're stepping away from mainstream media sources. The more we do that, the better it gets. It gets more independent and it gets more organic. But it's going to take a little while in this country, I think, to be able to change it fully.
As someone who's played and is now into the media and, as you say, look, started doing some stuff with the club, but now you're your own beast and sort of independent with your own studios and all, is there something you wish players understood more about the media or did differently? You know, they're not out to get you. They are there to build you up. Or how do you reckon players actually handle the media?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I don't think media's out to get players. But I do, I think the general reaction and treatment of a player that comes out and says something that's, you know, slightly controversial or might even, you know, even just like the treatment of Harley Reid, not the back page stuff. Like, we all know that's complete bullshit. But he comes and says, oh, you know, I'm feeling homesick. The immediate reaction from most people is like, oh, my God, he wants to go home. He's, you know, he's going to get traded at the end of his deal and all this. Can't we just have our first reaction be like, he's a 19-year-old kid and he's living in another state and all of his mates live back in another state? Of course he's fucking homesick. He's just being honest. So we see honesty from players, and I think immediate reaction from fans and from media is to go whack. And that's holistic. Like, that's not, you know, that's probably not getting changed anytime soon. So to answer your question, what would I don't know. Look, I was always very honest with the media when I was a player. Again, I didn't really fear consequences of something blowing up in the media. And albeit, you know, I was never a Harley Reid, of course, on the back pages. But I never approached press conferences or interviews with, oh, geez, I'm scared with what I'm going to say. Just tried to say what was on my mind and be honest. And I don't know, if you do that, like, what can anyone say? It doesn't really matter what anyone thinks, does it? It's just what you think. It's just an opinion.
I mean, we'll get back to Harley later on. As you say, there's so much to talk about with all the stuff on the back page of the West and people, like you say, latching onto absolutely everything. We'll get back on field for a moment now. And as I say, you were there on the weekend. You saw what the Eagles did to Melbourne. Very unexpected in a lot of ways. Is there, when you're sitting there calling the game, and maybe not a full-blood, lifelong Eagles nuff like myself, but you know a lot of those boys and you know the systems, you know the structures, or at least where they were when you were there. Are you looking there blown away by what you see, or do you look at it and go, yeah, I kind of expected a little bit of this. They've shown signs of this, that, or the other. Were you just as shocked as we were?
Specifically from the weekend or holistically for the year?
Let's do the weekend first, and then we'll talk about where we're at.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I didn't expect them to beat Melbourne. And like, I, you know, everything that I say is very public as well, so I don't really have anywhere to hide. The start of the year, I was really critical. I thought they were brandless. I thought West Coast as a side was standing for nothing. And I don't think I could really, anyone could argue with me that when 50, 60, 70 point losses, and they were getting worse and worse. And so naturally, I just thought, well, what's changed? But from that Sydney gather-round, where they showed some really competitive spirit against, I think, the best side in the competition, yeah, they've been able to back it up, haven't they, especially at home. So I think they're a young side. And on the weekend, a young side took on a good team. They were really role-driven against Melbourne. Like, Oliver was tagged by Sheed, which I think is a brilliant role to have Sheed in. He's not good enough to be a starting three midfielder, both in form and confidence and comparatively to other mids. But tagging Oliver was good. Going head-to-head with Gorn, with Bailey Williams, and being really aggressive and physical with him was great. And they had some, you know, they planned to win. And that sounds silly. Like, why don't we do that every week? But it was quite clear that they had a few plans that they thought would, you know, help them win. And then guys start stepping up like Harley and, you know, others around the ball. Tim Kelly, I thought, was really good on the weekend. So, yeah, it's been good to watch the development. And it's surprised me. Yeah, to answer your question, it has surprised me a bit.
When you see a guy like Jake Waterman do what he's done over the last month or 6 weeks or whatever it is, obviously you would have clashed with him a little bit in training, but short of a few waffle games here or there, I don't think Eagles fans have seen this or expected this. Where has this come from? He's top of the Coleman, even though he's a game down on the rest of the pack, and he's just marking everything. Did you see this coming, or you seen it in training and thought, yeah, he might get there?
Oh, I mean, not letting the Coleman, but he's always been the player he is right now. Like, he's not... I don't think, you know, he hasn't just become this brand new forward. Like, he's always been a fit, hardworking, good one-on-one guy. I think his role's changed a bit. With no Allen, no Kennedy, and Darling taking a step back, he's become the guy. So that's not saying anyone could do it and do what he's done if you're in that position. But certainly he's become more prominent for entries and targets. And then what he probably has done better than any other year is his contested work, his one-on-ones, holding marks, the ability to clunk, you know, marks that maybe sometimes drop. He's always been a great kicker goal, always been the best set shot of the club, I reckon. He's always been one of the fittest. And he was forced to really focus on his footy getting back from illness. So just compile all of those and experience. Like he's been in the league for, gee, that's testing me, 7, 8, 9.
Like, what, I don't know. 7 or 8, I think. Yeah, something like that.
So you get to a point in your career where you start figuring it out, and he's probably just figured it out. And just, it's not one thing, right? It's all of the above. But am I surprised? No, but certainly plays for him. Great mate of mine, Jay, and just so happy for him. See him playing good footy.
A bit of a champion of defenders. It's sort of become your brand, especially on Backchat and sponsoring a few defenders around the league. Brady Hoff, I think, is the revelation of the season. Obviously, aside from Harley, aside from Jake, they're the big two. I reckon he rounds out the three big revelations for the season for the Eagles, certainly for Eagles fans. How have you made, you know, watching his games, how enjoyable has that been? A little bit of a, almost a Brad Shepherd type, I think some fans are starting to dub him, a bit of a no-nonsense, just take on anybody, any size sort of defender.
Could he be a Will Schofield? I just find that out. I've heard Brad Shepherd thrown out a fair bit, but I used to be able to do what Hoffy did. I think he can play tall, he can play small. I don't think Shep could ever play tall. He might be able to play taller than he was, but you couldn't put Shep on a key position guy. You could put Hoffy on a key position and he'd find his way, and then he can play really small. So if I may, I might just compare him to myself, which means he's a brilliant footballer. I've enjoyed what I watch. Look, I'm taking a piss, obviously, but yeah, I've loved watching Hoffy. Gets a role every week. It's the most difficult role because you can concentrate for 99.9% of a game and have one lapse and they might kick 1, 2, 3 goals, bang, 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 because they're the best player on the ground usually. So it's an incredibly hard position to play. Not physically, yes, but mentally. Like you cannot lapse at all. And when you do, you get punished. You might tag someone in the midfield and they get a few touches and nothing happens, but in a forward line, have a couple of lapses and it's goals. So, yeah, so impressed. Going well, Hoffy. Love watching him.
Now, you mentioned at the start of the year, maybe the Eagles not standing for much, not really having much of a brand. And then obviously it's grown into where I think most fans are pretty pleased with it now. And we can kind of see a way out of what we've sat through for the last couple of years. A few changes at the club, and you've been involved sort of from a club perspective, still in a media role, but externally as well. Do you pick that up in the off field? Do you see, okay, Don Pike's in, there's a bit more of an energy around the club, maybe some changes in Simo, or is it just basically in your role, you kind of see what they show up on game day and that's largely it. Did you see a bit off field?
Yeah, it's been interesting. Like, I'm still mates with a lot of the boys. I see them not really from a training element, have beers with them every now and then and catch up. A lot of the girls are all mates, so our kids all hang out together, you know, that older crop of guys. Certainly they were very impressed with Matty Innes, new fitness coach that's come in. Spoken really highly of him, a lot of the guys I'm in contact with. So I think they enjoyed the preseason. It was different. And that's not saying anything on Warren Kofed either. That's just a change. Players need a change. So the same goes probably with Trevor Nisbet, still an incredible leader and someone who probably could have taken the club forward. But to get a change of vision, some new eyes, someone who's as experienced as Don Pike, both as a player who's had success as a player, but then has coached, has been in business, has head coached, has assistant coached, been at three different, you know, West Coast, Sydney, Adelaide. Like,
yeah,
there's not too much he hasn't done. You know, Nizzy didn't have that element. He didn't have the football element, which, you know, wasn't an issue. He was an incredible leader, and I couldn't speak more highly of Trevor Nisbet. Yeah, I think the change has been good. Pikey's really got to focus on making the club a more of a football club element, and that might seem silly, but
no,
in the cut and thrust of AFL footy, you forget that you're a footy club. It becomes a business. So I think he's done that really well.
I think that would be music to the fans' ears as well. I think that's one of the big criticisms. Because obviously, as a business, the Eagles are probably second to none, definitely right up the top. But I think when the results are going the way they are, and you think, oh, we're more of a business than a footy club, I think that's exactly what you want to hear and what I suppose we've really enjoyed seeing from a fan's perspective. If you go back to the start of your career when you arrived, the Eagles sort of went into a similar trajectory, you know, towards the bottom of the ladder and kind of fell away from a pretty recent premiership. What's that like for the young boys, do you reckon, that they turn up, their first real exposure to AFL footy is losing essentially week in, week out? and you know, as you said, you've come across from the other side of the country. You're homesick. You're 19 and on another part of the world, basically. What do you do in that sort of situation where the wins just aren't piling up?
It's actually less about wins and more about competitiveness, to be honest. Like when I got over here, I was at the Peel Thunder. I think we won 2 games in 2 years. But I developed a lot as a player because I was playing with adults, with men, with a football club. They had fine systems. They had palmy nights. They had ladies nights. They, you know, all that stuff that, to answer your question, like I really don't think we've got the waffle system set up right at the football club. And I know Pikey's looking very closely at it at the moment, whether they commit to a national competition reserves grade, whether they combine back with an East Perth or a Perth or whatever it, you know, was standing then. They're really looking closely at it because I don't think it's set up correctly at the moment. The boys don't have the young boys especially, they don't have the chance to be competitive. They don't have the chance. It hasn't been set up to win. And so I think that's the biggest failure. If they're not winning, it's fine. Honestly, like you probably learn as much losing as you do winning, but if you're not competing like that waffle side as recently, and then the AFL side, you know, that was the issue with the AFL side as well, the competition element. Like, and fans can see that too. I don't think fans realise that, you know, you're not going to win a premiership every year, but if you can just be competitive and you can just have a crack, fans are happy, players are happy, and coaches probably are too.
Having seen a few different versions, I suppose, of waffle footy in your career, with Eagles having alignments and then having their own waffle team, I know you came back and made a bit of an appearance there. When you come back and see that current system, does it look out of whack with what you recognise? It was a bit of a cameo, I know, but is it? It's just not even representative of your experience of waffle footy?
Yeah, that's correct. They don't have a senior leadership team. They don't train. They're not a football club. They come in and train twice a week and then play on the weekend. Like, that's not a footy club. They don't have the opportunity to all train together. They don't have a salary cap to go and buy players. They can't access players from academies or regions like other waffle clubs do. They've got a lot of restrictions on recruitment. And then you know, I don't think West Coast put the amount of resources in they probably should have as well. So I think they probably half-assed it to get it going. It went okay for the first couple of years because they had a pretty strong crop of outside guys. As soon as that fell away and then injuries came, there's no way you can learn anything as a player. So, yeah, look, I experienced it firsthand. I told the leader, I spoke with Nizzy and the guys as well and told them my concerns around it. I'm sure that, you know, everyone's looking at every part of the football club right now because they got a lot of improvement to do.
So you come in, the results probably aren't going the way you want, but as you say, the competitiveness is what matters. But suddenly the AFL side starts to be pretty competitive, 2011, a new regular feature in that team. To go from a wooden spoon club, 2011, top four, prelim, all of that, is there a point in the season where you thought, yeah, this is all right, and then suddenly you go, hang on, we might be a chance with all of this? Or is it so, I suppose, week to week, you know, you're always just focused on the next. Do you ever actually get a chance to stop and think, oh, this might have turned a corner here?
We don't really know until you know, right? So, like, with 2010, like, I got to the footy club in 2006, end of 2006, so I saw, you know, effectively came into a premiership-winning squad. We probably should have gone deeper in 07, 08, 09, some issues, trying to sort our culture out. 10 was the, you know, result of all that, and we went backwards. But we played a lot of kids. And so, the 2011 season, yeah, like, you could feel it, but it was off the back of a lot of our senior guys coming back and playing good footy. If you remember, Dean Cox, Andrew Embley, Bo Waters, those guys were all our best players that year. And then it allowed us younger guys to get to work. But similar to games that the Eagles have played well this year, when Yo plays well, when McGovern plays well, when Kelly plays well, then the youngsters can go well. You think about the Derby, Yo was amazing. Tim Kelly was very good. McGovern was very good. So, and then Harley Reid, you know, pops up. Very rarely are we, you know, these first couple of years, are we going to have Ruben Jimby, the boy, and Harley Reid, you know, leading the way. And nor should it be that. It should be Yo, Kelly, McGovern, Barris, Allen, Duggan, which I think has happened. Like, Duggan's been incredible this year. I don't think you could fault him as a captain. He just backs up consistent, just a, he's a proper Shannon Hearn type operator. Every week he has 20, 25, 30 touches, and he's look, like I know sometimes his polish isn't there, but he's a consistent performer. Effort's always there. Can never fault that. So I think him as a captain's been an inspired choice.
Do you see parallels a bit between those teams then, saying, all right, well, you've got the Coxies and Kerrs and these guys were stepping up in 2011 where we are now. Do you see parallels, or do you think maybe the Eagles have those senior guys? Because there is a bit of a gap after the established brigade of your Govs and, you know, even guys like Barass Kelly. The next age bracket down is pretty barren at the moment. Do you worry that maybe they're not in the same spot that 2011 side was to really build and crack on 2015, really make a decade of it?
No, I think you're going to find it tougher than 11. Yeah, for sure. You're not making a prelim this year. let's just get that straight. Calm the fun. Dan Cost, my partner in crime, back chat is fucking banging on about finals. Calm the farm.
No, the lid's off for sure.
But you know, can they all grow together and form, you know, a big squad of players that can take this club to the next level? Yes, they can. I just think it'll take a bit longer. With all of this, like, what do we know, though? Like, I'm certainly not someone that sits around. People love calling themselves experts, right, and play the game and my expert commentary, all that. I say my opinion, but in the end, that's all it is. Like, I don't fucking know. Anyone who tells you that, you know, some of these operators in the media get bang on about it and their ego is so big that they can't fall on their own sword and, go back on something they've said, like, because what they have to say is so fucking important. Like, does my head in. So, look, I think it's going to be a longer rebuild. Could they do it quicker? Sure they could. Yeah, absolutely, if some things go right. Could it take a lot longer? Could this list be not good enough? Yeah, sure it could. But that's what footy is, right? Like, you know, you got to put the right things in place. A lot of things need to go your way to be able to have success. So I don't know. You don't know. No one knows. But we hope for the best.
You talk about having success, obviously. Got to experience some serious success in 2018. You've told a few stories about late in the game, charging up the ground and all this sort of business. Again, was that one of those ones you don't know until you know? Or did you guys work out pretty early that was maybe a really exciting year?
2018?
Yeah.
Honestly, 2018 for me was brutal. 2015 was my favourite year of footy ever. That year we put together in 15 was so enjoyable. We missed finals in 14. And to build what we did off our defence in 15 was just a pleasure. I was a first pick player. We lost Brown and McKenzie at the start of that year. And it was me and Gov, basically, as key backs. TB was on the list, but he's still chasing barrels down at Scarborough. So it was pretty much me and Gov. And it was just awesome. Like, it was probably, you know, that patch of my career being first picked, it means a lot when you're mentally not fighting for your spot every week. And I played my best footy then as well. So for 18, mate, like I got picked round one, got dropped, was out of the side for 10 weeks. Came back into the side begrudgingly, basically. Oh, we better play him. Played some good footy. Did a hammy as I was starting to get into some form, and then came back into the side with a couple of weeks to go in 18. And I thought I was sort of up and about and going well, and then got dropped again for finals. So I look at 18 as incredibly fortunate, and it'll define a lot of my career and leave a fair legacy on the football club. But for 18, for me personally, if you're asking me, like, it was a shocking year. I hated it. Yeah, I had a really shit year. And, I only played in that grand final because Shep gets injured. Like, they didn't have me in the team, did they? So, have I got a chip on my shoulder about that? A little bit, yeah. Yeah, but I reckon that's all right. I'd tell Simo to his face. I have told him to his face. That's the thing with a lot of this stuff. Like, everyone wants to, you know, dance around it and I can hide in the bushes and skirt around the edges. Like, just say how it is. It pissed me off and I didn't think I was appreciated as a player towards the back end of my career. But that's also how it goes. I'm happy outside of footy now, enjoying media and enjoying talking shit about other people doing the same thing I did for 15 years. So, it's all good. Yeah, I don't feel sorry for myself, but that's the facts.
post grand final, and you're talking about sort of the last couple of years when you were finishing up, obviously things started to come unstuck a little bit at the club. I don't know that many would have predicted the depths that it's quite gotten to recently, but there were some things there where I know the fans were starting to get a little bit unhappy. It definitely looked like back-to-back wasn't going to happen. Then you go into the hubs, that definitely didn't happen and all of that. So when you're within the walls of the club, do you look around and think, oh, we're sort of outside the window here again? You know, we've not maybe done the things we need to do, or we're not heading in the direction I thought we might head off the back of that grand final?
Not really. I mean, you can't fault the club for going and getting a good midfielder in 19, but then you can also can't really fault the sort of what happened, I suppose. Like, you know, a lot of people talk about the Tim Kelly trade, and TK is a gun. Love him, works hard, commits himself, wins a best and fairest last year. I think he's proven he's been a good trade for the football club. Now, did it work out for 19? No, it probably didn't. But, you know, I think the club was trying to have a crack, weren't they? They were trying to double down and improve our team so we could go back to back. And hindsight's a beautiful thing. Look back and go, oh, we didn't get that right, did we? But you don't know until you know. And then so we don't do the trade, and then we what? We don't make finals. So we, you know, say we didn't do the trade, and then we don't do it. Well, then you haven't had a crack, and you haven't got the results. So. It's always interesting looking back on it, but I just think it's difficult to talk about it in hindsight.
And then 2020, you're in the hubs, and obviously an unsettled year for pretty much all of footy, I suppose. But from a fan's perspective, I think there's a couple of guys, and you'd be one of them. I think Jetta would be another one, where things, I suppose, from the outside were a little bit, it seemed like maybe some relationships were fractured, or just things weren't as settled and as peachy keen as maybe they once were. Is there any truth to that? Can you speak to that? Can you not speak to that? You know, is there anything inside where you thought, okay, we're at a bit of an end of an era here?
Oh, no, less about the end of the era, like more just specifically about what we're doing. Like I was vocal about us going or not going over there. And we all look back at that time and just think, what the fuck were we doing? Like, absolute joke, isn't it, really? Like, for insight into me, I was effectively paying to play at the football club in 2020. I was on the lowest wage you could be on, so a rookie wage in a one-year deal with match payments, right? And then we got split in half. So my weekly wage was lower than JobKeeper to play at West Coast.
Really?
And wow. there was about six of us like that. And so if I didn't play a match, I was under JobKeeper, right? So I thought, well, fuck, okay, I'll get on JobKeeper. I wasn't allowed to apply for JobKeeper because of the salary cap of football clubs, and the AFL stopped the six of us applying for JobKeeper. So I'm trying to run two businesses here. I was trying to raise my one of my children, and then I had a pregnant wife and a mortgage to pay. And what I'm just expected to go, oh, no worries, AFL, I'll do whatever the fuck you want. Like, I just thought it was a joke, really. And, that fractured things, not from internally, but, like, put yourself in that position.
Yeah.
Don't worry about West Coast or your alliances with the club. Like, that's my job. And I'm getting paid under JobKeeper. And like, mate, we almost took it to the Fair Work Commission. Like, It was ridiculous. And I don't laugh about it now. But there was guys like Hamish Brayshaw was the same. And he didn't have 12 years of an AFL career behind him as well. So it was a bloody brutal time for AFL players. You think what you like. It was brutal for everybody. But, you just have to look at individual circumstances. I don't think it was internal, the fracturing, but certainly the circumstances. Like, we didn't handle it very well, did we? But, again, hindsight, can't change it.
And then, I suppose, moving on to the next phase, you're now in the media, and as you say, that's probably something that grew from early on in your time with your club, a few podcasts and the like. Is that something you knew, this is what I want to get into? Did you ever consider coaching, or straight away you're like, no, I want to get on TV, get online?
No, didn't ever want to coach. Absolutely brutal job coaching. The hours they put in, like my good mate Luke Shuey is now doing it, and it's just a brutal occupation. So I was never going to do that. Although I am in my Aquinas gear right now, I do look after a school team here in Perth, but at AFL level, it's a no for me. I was doing media very early days at West Coast in my career. I was, you guys might remember Eagle Vision. I used to jump on and do introductions for that back in, like, that was like 2011, 2012.
Did you have something with Nikoski and Shuey? Were the three of you did a pod, or did you guys used to run around and do something, didn't you?
We had the tripod, I think we called ourselves, and it was just like stupid online banter. Nice. We had Squawk Talk. I did that with Kale Morton. That was the first podcast West Coast ever had.
Yeah.
Very early days, I loved media. And really, I liked it because I was good at it. As the same with any sport that I did. I like sports that I was good at, and I think that's pretty reasonable. Mm. It's difficult to like things that you're not good at. Like, I hate golf. I like playing it, but I hate golf because I'm terrible at golf. Whereas media and talking and opinions and I've always found it quite natural, and I can think on my feet. You know, I'm intelligent, and I can self-deprecate pretty fucking easily. I'm happy to take the piss out of myself and have a laugh at myself, and I think that's important not to have ego in media, because otherwise you just – there's a lot of ego in media, a lot of ego. Mm. So to answer your question, I probably always did want to go into media, but when I first came out, I started a digital marketing company, which was one of the companies I was running when COVID happened. I did that for sort of 18 months. I sold it back to my business partner, and then Backchat, Dan and I sort of started taking that more seriously, and here we are. Yeah, really. But, you know, we've got more than one podcast now. We've got Backchat, but Backchat Studios looks after about 5 different podcasts at the moment, and we're growing that pretty steadily. We've got 8 employees. I've got a nice studio in Northbridge now, and growing pretty quickly and rapidly over the last couple of years.
And is the plan to just keep growing that? I mean, you obviously got your commentary as well. Is that, you know, one takes priority over the other? What's the next step?
I really enjoy TV commentary. Radio commentary is probably not challenging enough at times for me. So radio is okay, but TV is really challenging. The immediate feedback. You know, radio, you could be calling a game and someone's not watching it, so they don't know if you're right or wrong. Whereas TV, everyone is watching it. And so you mess one name up, you say something out of turn, you make a mistake, everyone knows. And everyone can see it. And so you're held very accountable. So you've got to be well prepared. You've got to do your research. You've got to understand how the game's going. You've got to call it how you see it, but you've got to have good balance. Like, there's a lot of intricacies there that I really enjoy about TV. So, yeah. I maintain the mainstream media work, but I am really trying to push people back to our podcast in Backchat, Shelter Footycast, all that sort of stuff. That's what I use the mainstream as, but I do enjoy it. Yeah, I do really enjoy the TV stuff.
The footy media world, such a content factor, I suppose, at the moment. Do you think people are actually doing enough research? Because I know from a fan's perspective, I'll sit and talk about Vic Bias until the cows come home, and some of the crap that we've seen in the last few weeks, this business class story, and even just all the managing of Harley Reid, all of it, it's crap. It's just this big content machine, right? Do you think there is actually the research being done by all of these guys to the right level, or do you reckon there's some people probably skirting by on reputation?
Yeah, it's an interesting call, isn't it? For starters, it's pretty difficult. Like, I think people look in the media, whether it's podcasts or TV or radio, and they think, well, like, what a fuckwit, he's stuffing it up, or he's not researched enough, or she's not researched enough, or she's not good enough at her job, or whatever it is. And I see all the criticism, and I cop some of it, and that's fine, but it is a difficult job, and I think it's more difficult than people realize. I would challenge anyone like who's listening along now, or anyone in general, like, Go and put a camera in front of your face, and not gun to head, but also like spit something out first time, get it right, don't stuff it up. Don't mess a name up. Don't mess a word up. Get your thoughts out. Say what you want to say. Be prompt. Be direct. Be balanced. Be unbiased. Don't let any of your feelings get in the way, but be emotional enough. There's a lot that goes into it. So I think people just in broad brush it a little bit. But in saying that, yeah, clearly there's good operators and poor operators. Yeah, so to answer your question, I think people are, you know, I honestly think people are researched enough. I think we can probably be too critical at times on people. Doesn't mean I can't have a laugh at others and people can't have a laugh at me. I think sometimes we take ourselves way too seriously. How I approach things in the media, I shoot from the hip a lot. Mm-hmm. Throw some stuff out there. Sometimes it sticks, sometimes it doesn't. People hang on to it for fucking years, mate. Like, it's just hilarious. I find it so funny that I literally could not tell you. I had a podcast this morning, couldn't tell you what I said on it. No idea. I can't remember what I did, you know, 5 minutes ago sometimes. So, yeah, I don't know. People love reading into things probably too heavily. I think sometimes we need to have a bit of a laugh and just accept it for what it is, and it's content most of the time.
You got Pies fans in your mentions quite a lot. I notice you do the smart thing. You throw some of the Pies fans easy.
Pies fans are so easy, mate.
It's good for numbers, though. There's enough of them. They always pump up your numbers. That's the smart thing. That's very nice.
Yeah, cheers. I have good fun with them.
All right, so let's talk about Harley Reid. I mean, the coverage of him, as you've said up top, the stuff with the West is a bit of a disgrace. You wrote the article in Code Sport saying you've seen, obviously, Nick Knack come through his career and a little bit of Ben Cousins at the front end of your career. What do we do here as fans? How do we support this bloke? We've got no real direct line. We can't control the media. We can't control the narrative. You know, what would you say? How can we support this bloke who's getting, I suppose, just dragged out there time and time again at 19 years of age?
I wrestle with it daily, right? I'm in a unique position where I can probably change the narrative a little bit, not much really, but with Harley specifically, like, I've become not mates with him. I speak to him quite a lot, see him at a lot of functions, see him out and about with the boys. Mm. He sees a bit of our media coverage when we pump him up. He usually get a little message on the side. Great bloke, really good fella. And I really am conscious of creating more hype for him. So we could have him on back chat tomorrow very easily. But I'm putting the brakes on it because I just feel like, fuck, man, like, he's just – people love him, which is great, but there's so much attention, so much pressure for this young kid. And I think that's fine in the positive sense. Like, people are going to love him. Like, what he's doing is just incredible.
Mm.
But the West stuff, the reason why the West stuff is disgraceful is it's not positive. It's a fucking laugh. It's putting him on the back page for their own benefit. I guarantee you not one person in that paper has spoken to Harley Reid, sees how he feels about it. I guarantee you. Which just does, mate, and it's a complete selfish, self-centered fucking garbage. So to answer your question, I don't know what fans. I don't know. I'm not going to tell you to unsubscribe from the West. That do what you like. I've tried to take a really proactive approach and call it out when I see it. I've got direct line now to the editor that anytime I see a back page, I usually shoot him a message and tell him he's a fucking idiot.
Nice.
But I don't know if every fan can do that. I think a growing support of Harley and being really positive about it's good. Anything that breaches the line or is negative or that sort of crap, I think we try to call out, but sometimes there's not much you can do, really, is there?
Put you on the spot, right? I think we can finish things up. You can let us know how's the game going, by the way? I haven't actually had it on. What are we at?
3 foot time. Aaron Norton, I reckon, has done his ACL. So those hoping to get him to the football club, that's, I don't know if that's good or bad.
Bloody hell.
He's in a big knee brace. Sydney kicked away that quarter. They're about 20 points up. Nice little multi sitting there with our good friends at Tab Touch. Nice. It's looking very nice, actually.
You're on Sydney then? You're back Sydney in?
Yeah, backed him at the line. I thought it was a no-brainer. Sydney's the best side in the comp. Eight and a half point head start.
Very nice. If you could change one thing about footy, Scoey, before we go, what would you change? It can be media or a rule or anything. Anything you like.
Oh, I bang on about it a lot, but I think if the tribunal went to purely action before outcome, I think that would clear a lot of discrepancies up with what we're seeing. Just to use two examples. Luke Parker, even though it was VFL, they use the same rulings as AFL. His bloke breaks his jaw and he gets 6 weeks. And they appealed it. I don't know what happened with the appeal. Did that
I haven't seen the state of it. I know they said they would. I didn't see anything happen there.
Let's say you got 6 weeks, right?
Yeah.
And then you look at old mate from St Kilda who knocked out Michael Frederick on the weekend, Jimmy Webster. So Jimmy Webster, in a pure football action, which shouldn't be in any weeks, and he got 0 weeks, knocks unconscious a player, right? So that's outcome. Like Michael Frederick is unconscious and he can't play for a week because of the concussion protocols. But it's been judged on action, which it was a football action, so no weeks. Luke Parker approaches someone from the front, hits him in the front, stops to a pause, clashes heads, gets a 6-week penalty because of the outcome. Like, if he doesn't break his jaw, does he not get 6 weeks? If we just look at the action, right, no malice, not a lot of power. Okay, yep, he's hit his head, but don't suspend him. I think we get a lot more consistency. So I'd like to see action over outcome.
The Gaff and Hogan example of Hogan a couple of weeks ago is the one where, you know, it's essentially the same action. Jesse Hogan gets nothing. Gaff, rightfully so as well, obviously shattered his jaw. Got heaps of weeks, missed a grand final, and it's the difference is luck. The difference is a millimetre where you catch them flush or not.
They both probably should have been 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Regardless of what happened to either of them, you punch someone in the head, it's probably 4 or 5 weeks, both of them.
Nice. Well, good spot Chad to leave
Warner,
it on.
Before I leave you.
Yeah.
Chad Warner to West Coast. Don't worry about Norton. Don't worry about English. Don't worry about anyone else. Get Chad Warner to West Coast. I think it would cost four.
How many picks would it cost to get Chad Warner across?
You might have some. You might actually have some.
You're gonna have a
war chest as well.
If they were to give up, let's say they end up pick 2 or 3 plus a future first, that's not getting it done. Sydney surely don't move on that. You want more than that for Chad Warner.
Well, how are you getting Tim English and Aaron Norton? Everyone thinks we're getting them nice and easy. That's not gonna happen either.
I've got some thoughts on Tim English.
It's the same argument.
Yeah, I'm not particularly fussed by Tim English, let's just say. But, I mean, Warner's under a big contract.
People love him.
Yeah, people love him. I know. He's a free agent at least. But, I mean, Warner, they talked today, I saw a headline about moving to more of an NBA model where you can trade further years in advance. It would take that to get Warner out of Sydney. Surely they're not letting him go for anything.
Can we go through some comments and reply back to some? What do you reckon?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's have that. All right, I'll scroll back up to the top. We might have lost track of
it. I'm just having a scroll.
Here we go.
Do you think having Harley Reid could make us more of a destination club for that middle-aged bracket type of player we desperately need from Kane Thompson? I think that's a good call. I think if you're a Chad Warner or Liam Baker or some of these guys getting into the club, you think, fuck, I want to go play with Harley. I like that. That's good. I really like that from Kane.
He seems to be, because there was a few interviews with Clayton and Petrarca and all these guys, he seems to be player's player at the moment. Nobody, you know, stopped talking about him. So, potentially, that's good. That's good. What else we got? Harley, some more about Harley, if you can imagine that. Chad Warner's a gun. Here we go. Chad Warner's a gun. Very good.
What about John St. John? Do I know you, John? I feel like I do know John St. John. I know someone St. John. Yeah, right. I might know you, John.
Do teams from the West
have to push? But yeah, you got it.
Yeah, do they have to push back harder against the AFL to try and even things out a bit? Can't do anything about geography, but, you know, maybe what, chartered flights, change of fixtures? What do you reckon?
They already have chartered flights. So, look, if you're going to go and change things, it's not chartering a flight. It's having a custom flight, like an NBA setup where you've got custom seats and you don't have other members of the public on there with you, that sort of stuff. That's not going to happen. Justin Longmuir brought up some really good points in his press conference this week. He said, areas they could look at is, and this was an issue my whole career, instead of playing a twilight game, you play a, sorry, instead of playing a night game on a Saturday, you play the twilight game so you can get home that week, that night, so you can have a 6-day break instead of a 5-day break. Just little alterations to the schedule could make a big difference.
Do you think it's born out of, I'm not going to actually say it's actually born out of malice, but do you think it's just so heavy in tradition that they simply don't think about how it affects other clubs, non-Victorian clubs?
Yeah, well, it's always been the way, hasn't it? So, maybe they haven't changed things. If you've got any questions, put them down the bottom because I can't be bothered looking through the top.
Here we go. Do you actually get along with Pav? Yeah. Sometimes it sounds a bit spicy, apparently, between the two of you. You obviously get paired up on most of the games.
Pav's great to work with. Get along with him really well. I know West Coast fans don't love him, but he is a professional, prepares really well, really good to bounce off and work with. He's intelligent, been in the media a long time. I love working with Pav.
We got one here coming through Twitch. How valuable would Yo be in helping develop and guide Reid, Jinby, Chesser, Hall, Hewitt, and the 2024 midfield class? Got to keep Adelaide chat.
Yeah, look, I think Yo, he really wants to stay at the club, and I think he will as long as they can get a fair deal in front of him, and it won't have to match Adelaide's, but it'll have to be fair. But he'll have to pull his side of the bargain too. You know, if he comes back this week, have they named him? Sorry, I haven't seen the team.
Yeah, he's in. He's in for Luke Edwards. That's the change.
Yeah. So, you know, comes back, does another groin. He's not worth much anyway. So he's going to have to hold up his head in the bargain and play footy this year. Can't keep getting injured. And if he does that, then West Coast have to pay him a fair fee. But I reckon, barring an extraordinary circumstance, I think he'll stay at the footy club.
When they talk about, oh, my manager's dealing with that, I'm just playing footy, I'll put that to the side, my manager can deal with that. Is that true? Like, let's be honest, is that true, or you're on the phone to the manager every weekend?
Not on the phone to the manager every weekend, but your manager does stuff all. Like, yeah, okay, in the background, but you're pulling strings. So I saw Yoey come out and say he was, you know, letting his manager do all the work and stuff. It's like, Yoey knows what's going on. Yoey knows exactly what's happening. It's a little get out.
Yeah.
Let's do a couple more, and then I'm going to watch the end of this footy.
Let's do it. Right. They're doing goal songs this year, Scully. Post-goal, you get a song. Jake Waterman's firing up every week at the moment. What would you
him.
Pick?
Hate him.
Hate him?
I hate him. But a Southern River Band, probably. A bit of Southern River Band.
Do you hate him from an atmosphere point of view, or what? Just like too American? Yeah,
it's not like 2020 cricket, is it? Like, let's move on.
Are you a draft watcher? Are you a mid-season draft? Got opinions on that at all?
I won't watch the draft. I'll see if anyone gets picked up. But, you know, Adam Simpson said it really well in something he did in the media recently, and said, just remember, this isn't an early take at next year's draft. This is a late take at last year's draft. This is guys that didn't get picked up and weren't ready 6 months ago. This isn't, you don't get early access to anyone. These are the guys that are left over. So there might be one, two, three guys that make it at the level. The rest, not that they aren't any good, but very hard to find someone. I mean, West Coast have done pretty well, haven't they? I mean, Ryan Marrick certainly looks Marrick's like he can play AFL.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Jai Cully, I mean, jury's still out on him, but I think he looks like he can certainly play as well.
All right, we'll do two more and then I'll let you go. Thoughts on doing mini hubs, you know, like a swing through Queensland or a swing through Victoria, bank some home games?
Yeah, love them. And do the reverse here, right? So get Collingwood and Carlton to come over here as well for back-to-back weekends. You flip the teams on the thing. So what that would do is just give West Coast and Fremantle a break for a week of not having to go forward, back. Yeah, I love them. I was trying to get them over the line when I was still at the club. Go to Brisbane for 9 days and get in on Thursday, play Saturday, play the following Friday, go home. Get out. You get two games done and then you get to stay at home for 2 weeks.
All right, last one. We'll finish on this one then. You played with some great keybacks over the years. You don't have to give us a top five or anything like that, but who do you reckon? Who's the best defender you've played alongside? McKenzie, Glass, Gov, Tommy Barras, Hearn? Who do you like?
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
Keybacks? Can we just keep it to keybacks? Because I can't go all out backman. It'll just probably be if it's all night.
Keybacks.
All right. I will rank them. Let's rank them, hey?
Let's do it.
Geez, that's even hard. I'll give you. I think McGovern won. Just formed a really close relationship with him, and we were a good pairing. Like, I know he used to love playing with me, and I used to love playing with him. I wasn't a jumper, and I wasn't trying to intercept Mark, and he wasn't trying to hold his bloke out of contests and keep him to the ground. So we. Bit of yin and yang, and we paired pretty nicely together for a good couple of years there. Darren Glass in behind him, like he was a leader, proper leader, unbelievable. Love playing with him. Chad Warner's had 23 disposals, kicked 4 goals, 15 minutes remaining, just fucking quiet.
Bloody hell.
So if you want him, you might want him to cool off a little bit.
Yeah, let's get him tonight.
Let's have TB. Best mate from footy, close enough to it anyway, even though there's a fair age gap between us. So I'll have TB at 3. I'll have McKenzie at 4. Drafted with Easy. He's a good man. And at number five, I will go Mitch Brown. Put Brownie at five. Love playing with Brownie. He's a good man.
Very good. Iconically playing in the forward pocket in that Dogs final as well, which went absolutely beautifully for us. So that's an everlasting memory of Mitch Brown. Nice one. All right, we'll leave it there, Sko. I'll let you get back to the footy, let you watch the Swans kick on and Chad Warner increase his price. But appreciate your time. Thanks for stopping by. And everybody needs to check out Backchat. And what else you got? Backchat Studios, you got the Sheltercast. Where else can we find you?
Oh, I mean, if you guys don't have enough footy content, it sounds like you're getting looked after here on the Big Footy Eagles podcast. But if you don't, I'd be jumping on Backchat. We go live on YouTube twice a week, Mondays and Fridays at 4:30 Western. We have a guest interview on Wednesdays. So we got Usman Khawaja this week, which is pretty fucking unreal. I interviewed the opening batter for Australia. And then the Shelter Footycast with me and Mark Redding is a bit more analytical. We get into the big issues of the weekend and break down games and plays and all of that. We do that on Mondays and Thursday mornings. So they'd be the two big footy ones I'd push you towards. But as always, you do you, everybody. Appreciate anyone's support, but if you don't want to, just go along your merry way. Love it either way.
Nice one. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Sko, I appreciate your time, and we'll talk to everyone soon.
Cheers, boys. Thanks.